How you feel?
It's getting worse.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Melrose Plays. Today's episode is Season 7, Episode 2, A Long Way to Tip a Rory. Yep. And now here are your hosts,
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
Okay. Hello, everybody. I need to go write my congressman about these shitty episode titles. I know it was 25 years ago. I don't care. I am mad. Anyway, while I'm doing that, as we mentioned last week, July 7th, we will be dropping episode 150 of Again With This. That's Jason Priestley in the series finale of the Fantasy Island sequel on Fox. We had a lot to say about fake mermaid tales and people being good sports. Are they related to Jason Priestley? You will have to find out. againwiththispodcast.com/club to hear that episode and all of the others before it. 150 episodes. We did it. Thank you, guys.
And now, let's get into this episode. Starting with our D-plot. Could this possibly really actually be the end of the line for Billy and Sam?
Oh, please. Please, Lord.
It would be nice to think so. Let's find out. At the jazz club, the morning after the big melee, Jennifer brings Billy coffee and remembers a time a guy dumped her and her mother said change makes you stronger. Billy feels like he's on America's Worst Marriage Disasters Part 3. Would watch Where Is Mike Darnell When You Need Him? This is exactly what he was doing at this time.
Truly.
But Billy wonders why he never sees these things coming. Well, in this case, partly because you're too annoying for any of the dozens of people who knew to have told you. To get Billy's mind off it, Jennifer suggests taking a day trip up the coast. She teases him into smiling, but for the record, this road trip never happens, so I don't know why they bring it up, honestly.
Yeah.
At the agency the next day, Sam lets herself into Billy's office to no reaction from him at all. She thinks they need to talk about getting divorced. Yes, agree.
Mm-hmm.
And so does he, and has already talked to a lawyer. He knows it takes 6 months. Shouldn't be a big deal since they don't own anything together. And he asks if she's going to move in with Jeff, but she's not ready for that. He doesn't say either way whether he's going to move in with Jennifer, but says that Sam can keep the apartment. She doesn't want it since he has lived there for years, as we know. Too many, he snorts. I agree with that as well.
Yep.
Maybe she'll have more luck there than he did. They agree that's all they have to discuss. I would love to believe we're done, but I just can't, unfortunately.
No, I can't either. And they're still making sure that her ring has a mark of its own that it's hitting in every scene. Like, my God, at least give that back and give us some, like, give the viewer some promise.
Yeah.
Ring. That this is going to be over, but they haven't done that yet, and it's annoying.
Hard agree. Over dinner at Kyle's, sometime later, Sam morosely tells Jeff that she and Billy are getting divorced. Jeff blandly says it must be difficult, and she tells him the particulars. He wonders if there isn't a way to get it done in less than 6 months, and she snaps that she knew he was going to start pushing like this. She doesn't plan on getting married again right away, so however long it takes, he has to live with it. And Jeff is justly annoyed to have gotten his head bitten off for asking one fucking question. So maybe Sam will be waiting alone for that divorce clock to run out. And then Billy is sidling past their table on his way upstairs, ignoring them. And at the jazz club, Billy tells Jennifer about the divorce filing. She notices that he's been wearing the same shirt for 2 days. Well, he and Guy don't wear the same size. Oh, my God. Shout out Guy. Sorry you had to get a mention for being Billy's off-screen crash pad, which, by the way, sleep at your fucking girlfriend's place. Sleep on the couch if you're going to be decorous about it. Like, it's huge. There's room for you.
Or go to the Bellage. You're vice president. Christ's sake.
Yeah. Anyway, Billy doesn't want to go back to the apartment to get more clothes, even though at this moment he knows that Sam is definitely not going to be there because she's downstairs. At Kyle's, Jennifer offers to pack up his things for him and drop them off. And then they go dance to the smooth jazz stylings of Ricky Peterson, who I guess is a real jazz artist, but I'd never heard of him. And he's in the episode and in the visual aids. Good for Ricky.
Yeah. That song is called Cube Poo. It's a good one. Just kidding. It's not. It's terrible. It's jazz.
On to the C plot. Speaking of terrible, future co-parents Taylor and Michael get a head start on being in each other's lives. And this is, again, content warning. This is the end of her suicide attempt story. Camera's all fuzzy as a blurry figure that turns out to be Michael drags Taylor out of her car and gives her mouth-to-mouth before scolding her for trying to check out. No matter how careless she is with her own life, she has to think about the babies and about the destiny that he, she, and the baby now all share. And Taylor repeats this dreamily before coughing herself back into consciousness because that was all a dream and the person who saved her is just some guy who not guy from the last plot line, just a guy who saw her car. She asks where Michael went, but the guy obviously didn't see anyone else near her and goes to call for help. And the next morning, actual Michael finds Taylor in the hospital. The baby is fine. Taylor still hasn't figured out she hallucinated what seemed to be their encounter by the car the previous night and asks him about it, including fantasy Michael's claim about wanting to be involved in the child's life. He has no comment on any of that, saying he's going to sign her out to stay at his place. And when he's left, she says her new reason for living is him, which I get it, but not for her. I don't know. Maybe she saw Lady Killers. Who's to say? Apologize for getting that song in your head again. At the hospital, some number of days later, Michael finds Peter in his office.
Damn it, I forgot about that. And now...
Can I tell you something? We watched that, like, what, 2 months ago? I still randomly get that song in my head, like, kind of anytime I see Thomas Calabro, which, like, given what we do, is a lot.
Oh, my God. I mean, I actually don't hate the song.
No.
Just, it's, like, not appropriate for me to be singing it to cats who are in my, who are dependent upon me to live, but, yeah.
Are you saying they don't
make
give
me
you
feel
sweet
just like
embrace?
A schoolboy, but I have no choice but to sing this. Okay, moving on.
At the hospital, if you don't know what we're talking about, please sign up for the Patreon and listen to our episode on the Thomas Calabro TV movie Lady Killers, where he plays a male stripper and dances to a song by Jeffrey Osborne, because the movie is legitimately great and I fucking loved it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At the hospital some number of days later, Michael finds Peter in his office gloating at the results of Taylor's paternity test, which I feel like they would just say subject ABC and not like a name, but whatever. Yeah. After Michael has torn up the paper, he asks for Peter's demands. Peter thinks they're both past blackmail now and pulls Michael in for a weird left-handed handshake, but it's just so he can hold him in place while he says some of this. Clip two.
So, you're talking about that little transformation in the mountains, aren't you?
Well, let's test it, shall we?
Sure, pal. Anything. What do you have in mind?
I want you to tell her, Michael. Admit you're the father.
Oh, no, Peter. No, I could do that.
You will do that.
Am I nuts, or is there an implied or else I will in your voice?
Michael... I'm giving you an opportunity here to handle this like an adult, not the sniveling coward that you are. Tell her, Michael. Or I definitely will.
Keep Peter in this mode. I love this Peter.
Yeah. Yeah, same.
Even though, what does he care? Like, what does he care about this?
Yeah, go get Amanda. Focus,
right,
boyo.
Mm-hmm. So the next day, Taylor is lounging at home when Michael calls. Clip three.
Look, when you get your next bill, don't panic. Just send it on to your insurance company. Oh, and there was a mix-up at the lab. It's no big deal. Just about the father of your baby? Well, it's me, not Nick. Like I said, no big deal. All right, I gotta go.
I knew it. I knew it. I could feel it.
Yeah, I'm really busy. I gotta go, Taylor.
Oh, Michael.
Oh, gosh, I knew you'd blow this out of proportion. Look, this doesn't change anything. Understand? There is nothing different. You're still raising this child by yourself.
If you were here right now, I'd give you the biggest hug.
But I'm not. I'm at the hospital being called in for surgery, as a matter of fact. Emergency surgery. Goodbye, Taylor.
All right.
Sure.
So now she knows. She hangs up and she does a very big, like, ooh-wee, my whole life has changed reaction, which you can see in the visual aids and is very cute. But you know, she was like, I knew it. And she did. So good for her. Hard to say good for her about Taylor.
She at least does seem to appreciate him for what he is.
Yeah.
Which is like a good schemer, obnoxious, has a cute ass, etc.
Yeah.
I don't think I think she might think she can manipulate him, but I don't think she wants to. So I don't hate this. I don't hate Tacini. I don't hate it.
Yeah. So when he gets home, Taylor's made them a huge fancy meal. Michael monologues that he should have known she would go over the top like this and not do what he said, because it's like asking an ape to do algebra. And Taylor croons that apes are very intelligent. Like, okay, sure. She comments that he has a hard time with change, but Michael says nothing has changed. He tries to do the right thing and his life still sucks. Taylor claims she doesn't want anything from him except some company during the pregnancy. He is supposed to look after her, though, because he signed her out. She thinks a father should experience the beauty of childbirth, too. This baby's a piece of him and his shot at immortality. And he whines at her to back off the hard sell. More news. It's a boy. She'll have her own little Mikey, she says. And the next morning, Taylor goes on about how much she loves living at the beach house and then notices Michael's nauseated face and guesses he's going to kick her out. But no, she can stay until the baby comes. After that, he will support the child, but only financially. Taylor says again that a baby needs a father and he'll be a good daddy. I agree with half of that, but he just currently asks if she accepts his terms, and she does. For now. On to the B-plot. Can Peter scheme to save the latest spoiled heiress from getting fucked over by her crooked dad? When Lexi arrives at her fake office, it's full of real, you know, fictional law enforcement agents removing apparently real evidence. And her lawyer, Jordan, brings her up to speed. Clip four.
They're seizing our records and all of our books by order of a federal judge. Apparently, they've been conducting an investigation since your father's death. This office, this company, its assets, it's all going into a receivership until financial restitution can be made.
Financial restitution? How much?
$5 million.
I don't understand this. What? Was it a bad investment? Was it back taxes? What?
Embezzlement, I'm afraid. Most likely by your father. And somehow, while you were setting up these offices, he got your signature on some very incriminating documents.
They think it's me?
Well, listen. We've got a week. A week to straighten this out. But if we can't, you're going to go to jail.
Oh, no. Not yes. Lexi?
I mean, I would point out that this is not how any of this business works, but it might be. We know absolutely nothing about it. Mm-hmm. And even if we did, we don't give a shit.
we don't.
Good luck. We'll put some money in your commissary. Maybe change it to some sweatpants. We'll get to that later.
Also, I mean, I alluded to this in the, you know, B-plot summary, but they have done this shit with the crooked dad and the shocked daughter so many times. They did it with Amanda. Mm-hmm. They did it with Brooke. And mm-hmm. here we are again. They sort of did it with Noah to switch it up on 90210, although he was not crooked. He was just, like, kind of incompetent, that dad. Mm-hmm. Anyway. Also, given the airs that she puts on, it seems like Lexi would hear the number 5 million and just be like, pay it, who cares? But we'll get to that, mm-hmm. I guess.
Yeah.
Back with Dr. Visconti, Peter's still very excited to have figured out he still loves Amanda. So are we, although I don't think we are that hopeful it's going to end up anywhere. But
no.
When he says she's the solution to all his problems, Dr. Visconti says this realization has actually created new problems. Like with Lexi, his current live-in girlfriend. And Peter wonders if it's really over between him and Amanda, because yes, she is with someone else now, but so is Peter. Dr. Visconti tries to tell Peter something as his doctor, but Peter's like, ex-doctor, I'm all better now. Bye. Gives him a very funny thumbs up that you can see in the visual aids.
Yeah.
So when Peter gets home, Lexi is drinking in the dark. He called earlier, but something's wrong with the phones in her office. Not just the phones, she says, but He's not curious about that and just says he has a problem. She does too, but he should go first because hers is worse. So he hems and haws for a while before saying he's still in love with Amanda. She plays it off like he is trying to cheer her up with some gallows humor, but when he says he's serious, she punches him in the face and calls him a selfish pig for doing this to her right now. And if he says another word, she will find a knife and cut his heart out. So he leaves, and she does a classic soap opera, like, slide down a wall, sob into the act out situation.
Yeah. She does play a pretty good drunk. She's not a good actor, and she's boring as fuck. That's not really Lunar's fault, but she does do that, like, right on the point of too much slurring really well, which, tiny cannon, yay!
The next morning, Lexi lets Peter in to get his shit, but since last night, he remembered that she had said she had a problem, and then he read what it was in the newspaper. Unless he has $5 million, he is useless to her. Which, again, going back to, like, what is available, doesn't she probably own a bunch of, like, real estate that she could sell at the very least? I mean, maybe it's all in the corporation's name because everyone fucking does that on this show, but...
Right.
Anyway, actually, clip 5.
Actually, I know where you can get 10.
Oh, let me guess. You were 2 when you bought IBM at 11.
All you have to do is marry Coop.
Right. What was I thinking? I'll marry a guy who has less money than I do. A guy that I hate almost as much as I hate you.
There was a codicil in your father's will. Coop told me about it. You marry him, you get 10 million. Just like your old man to do something like that.
That and so much more. Here's the one who got me into this mess. Steals $5 million for the company. But he manages to stow $10 million in a secret codicil. Oh, I swear, it's like he orchestrated this whole thing just because he likes Coop.
Well, that's a pretty short list, people your old man liked.
I marry Coop, I get $10 million. God, that is so sick! Oh.
Do it. Marry him, split the money, and your problems are solved.
Do it. Okay, dude. Okay. Jeez.
I mean, there's some noir deliveries in this scene that I don't hate.
Mm-hmm.
But also, it's like he orchestrated this. No, it is that. He did orchestrate this. Also, hey, writers. She was married to Coop before. Stop acting like they never met and still hate each other. Go back like 5 episodes, reacquaint yourself with what's going on, and then use words like remarry.
Mm-hmm.
How about that?
Yeah.
Oh.
Also, do it and all your problems will be solved. Peter doesn't add, my problems will be solved also, but that is true as well. So yeah. Lexi thanks Peter. She still despises him, but you know. Less now. And somehow Lexi managed to wait all fucking day to talk to Coop about this because it's dark out when she finds him in the hospital parking lot. He is sorry about her troubles, but he's not doing so great himself. Well, he would be if he married her, she says. She thinks a sham marriage to split $10 million makes sense. Not to him. She desperately says she needs the money or she's going to jail. He tells her one of the terms is that they have to live together for at least a year. She screeches that they'll work it out, but he won't. He is marrying Megan. Like, she can live with you too. Like, it doesn't say you have to sleep in the same bed. God. Anyway. Do people want money or not?
Yeah, seriously. Also, shut up, Coop. This is the only thing that's making you interesting. Do better. Come on.
Truly. So some number of days later, Megan's working at the jazz club when Lexi walks in wearing the longer version of Jennifer's skirt with the too high slit. And you can see it in the visual aids in a side by side just to get a sense of like truly how high this slit is.
It's so high.
It's crazily high. Lexi doesn't need Megan to take her order because she already had a few downstairs. The lawyers and the FBI boys are at her fake office waiting for her to turn herself in. Megan is sorry. As sorry as Coop was, Lexi snits. Megan is sure if he could have done anything, he would have. And Lexi then figures out Coop didn't tell Megan about the will and fills her in and says again she and Coop would split the money, which, like, she wasn't told about this whole deal. Like, Coop's hypothetical lawyers could probably make a credible claim. He gets the whole amount. I'm just saying. Like,
yeah.
Splitting it was Peter's idea and now yours. But anyway.
Mm-hmm.
That's when Coop rolls in and Lexi lets him know she has read Megan in Clip 6.
All right, Coop. This is your last chance. Hmm? And I won't even make you get on one knee.
You're pathetic.
No, you are, you rotten bastard. It's 1 year, one measly little year.
You know what? You think money means that much to me? You're wrong.
What about my freedom? Huh? Do you give a rat's ass about that? I'm looking at real prison time here. You know, I'm wasting my time here. Besides.
And ours.
I got a date with an executioner.
Oh my God.
You're gonna get a fine. You're a white lady who didn't know what the fuck was going on. You're getting a fine. Settle down.
Mm-hmm.
An executioner. Jesus.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess technically she did think she killed a guy last season, so...
She did.
Was that last season?
No, that was this season.
Oh, God.
No, I mean, oh, it was season 6, but, like, effectively still this season, because right. This is supposed to be part of season 6 as well.
This is the secret codicil of season 6. Yeah, got it. This
yes.
This is so
we're in the
dumb.
Season 6 appendix phase at right now.
Oh.
But also, like, you're going to spit on him? Really? Like, really? Anyway.
Yeah.
So in the very next scene, still in this absolutely ridiculous skirt, Lexi strolls in to surrender to an FBI agent. By the way, played by Julius Tenen, who will marry Viola Davis 5 years after this episode.
Oh.
He cuffs her and reads her rights while she stoically gazes through the conference room, Venetian blinds, blinking bravely. And apparently it takes Jamie Lunar a while to produce a tear because we stay on her face for so long. And then Clip 7.
Do you understand?
Yes.
The sex guitar is like, oh no, conjugal visits at a question mark? Oh my God. Who cares?
I know. Well, we don't have to care anymore for now because that's the end of that plot for the moment. Ooh. On to the A plot. No one really believes Rory will kill Amanda, but he's trying anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So we pick up here where we left off. Kyle stalking up the aisle to try to stop Amanda's wedding. Rory says they're already married, which doesn't stop Kyle coming straight at him and throwing him into the empty audience chairs. If Amanda wants to marry Rory, it's fine, Kyle says, but she's going to hear the truth. She yells back, and as a couple of security guards run in to drag him away, Kyle screams, she's not responsible for Christine's death, and he has proof. Amanda! And she is, you know, rattled. Obviously, Rory says they knew Kyle would show up eventually, but everything's fine. The jarhead's gone. And Amanda's sharp look at this slur seems to suggest she is less over the jarhead than she thought. But then Rory remembers they never got to the kiss, and she looks sick as he plants one on her and tells her it's over. But is it? But is it? Spoiler, it's not. So when we see Kyle next, he is calling Jennifer at the jazz club to say he's in jail, not for having started a jazz club, but on an assault charge.
Only in our hearts.
She snarks about calling Amnesty International. At least I think that's a joke, but she just has to wire $500 for his bail. And he catches her up on everything else, concluding by saying Amanda will be married to him when this is all over, but Jennifer doesn't seem so sure. And then we are at the remote island that Ian Gomez told Rory about, and he has now brought her to murder her, or try to. It looks like shit. She obviously hates it, but doesn't say anything. So when he asks about Kyle, she admits she is curious about what he was trying to tell her. And Rory notes that Kyle's been saying for weeks that Christine's death wasn't her fault, and Amanda agrees, scoffing about what proof he could possibly have all of a sudden. Amanda's sick of desperate, lovesick men, and that's why marrying Rory was so brilliant, Rory believes. And Amanda's only staying there for one night, but that's plenty of night for him. And that night, Rory tries and fails to get Amanda to say she likes this dump, and when he goes in for a kiss, she swerves him. He cheerfully guesses it's just first night jitters, but she thinks he planned this honeymoon to make her fall in love with him, which was never the idea. Clip 8.
Hey, I'm just trying to make an awkward time less awkward.
I mean, after all, you and I are more of a partnership than anything, right?
In a way, I suppose.
I mean, this is about nothing but opportunity.
Right, for you to keep Kyle away. For me, well, what do I get? I know. You could give me a piece of your agency, say half, right? And of course, I'll work for it by giving you ideas, handling new accounts.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Amanda, think about it. The sharp guy like me on board profits will soar. I mean, whatever it costs you, I'll make it up by bringing in new business.
I'm sorry, but that's never gonna happen. And I can't believe you even thought that it would. I mean, you have your business and I have mine.
Never the twain shall meet.
Never, ever.
You'll regret that decision.
I probably will. But you do understand, right?
Oh, right, yeah. Absolutely.
Why did they have to get... I get why they had to get married, but, like, this is just really... This is bizarre. This whole plot is just bizarre.
And there's, again, as I said in the last episode, like, there's been so little effort to even explain, like, other than he needs money. I mean, I guess we don't need any more information than that. Like, who cares? He's just here for a short time, not a good time. But it's still, like, even coming up this far, it's like, give her half your, take half her business. Like, where, what? This is your plan?
Yeah. And you didn't want to bring that up earlier?
Right. And even if she was like, yeah, totally, like, okay, then what? you have papers here for her to sign before she, spoiler, dies, like when you're trying to kill her? Like, this is, all of this makes no sense.
Or is he trying, I mean, I assume that he was trying to get her to voluntarily cut him in for half the business.
Right.
And then write it on the back of an envelope and then he wouldn't have to kill her, but now he has to kill her.
Right. Yeah.
But then why bother getting a remote island if you weren't planning to kill her the whole... You know what? Nobody else thought about it this much. Let's move on.
Well, also, you can try to kill her in your own nice room. Like, if you're just poisoning her with something untraceable, like, you didn't have to go this far.
Yeah.
See, I'm always thinking, what's the easiest way to try and kill someone? And this gigolo should be doing the same. Why am I telling you your business?
They're gonna pull his guild card for this, for sure. If he doesn't end up dead, let's find out.
Anyway, Amanda goes to try the shower. Rory says he will top up her champagne. And when he's gone, he taps in some kind of white powder. Oh, no. And the next morning, Kyle returns to the resort, hears that Rory and Amanda checked out the day before. There is one daily flight from there back to California, and Kyle already missed it for the day. Back to the island, Rory doses tea and brings it to a feverish Amanda. If that doesn't help, he's bringing her back to the resort, but she can't move. And when she tries to lie back down, he makes her drink more poison tea. And hours later, Amanda's still shivering in bed. Clip 9.
Help me.
Did you say help you? Oh, I think I've helped you along as much as I needed to. See, this is one of those good news, bad news things, Amanda. See, the good news is...
Actually, I can't think of any good news.
No, this is just a bad news thing. I've poisoned you. First the champagne, then the tea. A lethal dose of digitalis. It's a very hard-to-trace drug. See, the autopsy will confirm my suspicions that you caught some deadly jungle virus.
You can't do this.
Hey, look, all I wanted was a job, an office, and half of everything you got.
Oh, my God, I'll give it to you. Just get me to the boat. I won't tell anyone.
See, I can't take the risk, Amanda. Eventually, you'd tell someone. Probably Kyle. Probably the minute you saw him.
There'll be questions.
Yeah, like, why didn't I get you to the boat the minute I knew you were sick, right? I'll say I tried. But a wave washed over us. The boat was ripped up on the rocks. Our one last chance to get to shore. Sorry, Amanda. It's hopeless.
Oh, no. Yes.
Yeah. Also, that's not why you use Digitalis. She'd be dead already, but whatever. Moving on.
Yeah. So after he's told her all this, he then goes to the dinghy that brought them there and stabs the shit out of it, which you can also see in gift form. And the next morning in the hotel lobby, Ian Gomez, the concierge, tells Kyle he doesn't know where his friends are. But Kyle says he found them and then shoves Ian Gomez, the concierge, against a pillar in a very public place to lightly rough him up so he will spill about Rory, calling Ian Gomez, the concierge, puke face in the process. Rude.
Ew.
And tugging his ear like an angry mother. Like, really? This is, however, all it takes for Ian Gomez, the concierge, to give it up almost immediately because he is, you know, he's not made for combat.
Ian Gomez character. Yes.
Right. So Kyle shoves some cash in his hand before getting escorted out again. And when we see Kyle next, he's on the island yelling Amanda's name. Rory plays innocent, saying he's been looking after Amanda while she's been really sick. And he tore the boat up on the rocks and they've been marooned. Amanda woozily greets Kyle and tries to tell him about Rory, but she can't get the words out before Rory comes at Kyle with a knife. You can also see the moment where, because Sarah had the exact frame, Kyle looking at Rory like, this fucking guy? Really? It's very funny.
It's so good.
A fight ensues, obviously. Kyle has the advantage, and when he shoves Rory out onto the sand, Rory falls on his knife and dies, and Kyle has just no reaction whatsoever, which is fine, actually.
Relatable.
Seriously, bye, Rory. At a hospital later, a detective tells Kyle that Amanda corroborated his story, and the very speedy tox report shows Rory was poisoning Amanda, so Kyle's free to go. And instead, he checks on Amanda, who has been divorced, married, and widowed in 48 hours. She thanks him for saving her life. He really wants to tell her what he started to say at the chapel, which she elaborately rolls her eyes at in the classic Amanda way, saying he can't change things that have already happened, but he counters that you can explain them and tells her the story that we know. She just wants to be left alone. Again, as you said last time, like, no reaction to this woman that Nick found to do this thing died because of carelessness and an accident. She didn't sign up for this.
No.
It doesn't matter to Amanda who Christine was or wasn't. People die when they're around Amanda and Kyle. Well, I know you're the stars of the show, but that part of it really wasn't about you, kind of. And this is also a very stupid pretext for keeping them apart. She's not superstitious. She could just as easily say people die when they're around Taylor or around anyone Amanda knows, but Amanda can't explain it. She just knows it's wrong, and now she needs to sleep. And the next morning, a nurse tells Amanda that her cab to the airport is waiting and no one has seen Kyle since last night. So Amanda drops her latest wedding ring on the bed and leaves. And when we see her next, Amanda's cab driver has dropped her at that beach where Kyle is sitting by a fire waiting for her. She strolls over in her, by the way, entirely transparent skirt, which you can see in the visual aids. She's like wearing a beach cover up and a swimsuit to the plane. And she says this, clip 10.
You're a lunatic.
No, you are if you think we're bad together. It's just some kind of psychological babble, and I'm not buying it anymore. There's nothing left to feel guilty about, Amanda.
Yes, there is. I feel pretty damn bad about the way I've been treating you.
Am I complaining?
Well, and there's the fact that I haven't listened to you, that I took up with Rory, that I was unfaithful.
Absolved, absolved, and absolved. Next obstacle, please.
I was stupid.
So was I.
Yet another reason we are so damn perfect together. You know, this is the exact spot that I fell in love with you. I couldn't leave without coming to visit.
Why visit? I'm ready to spend the rest of my life here.
Welcome home.
All right. I guess.
I just killed a guy for you. Let's fuck.
What? Yeah.
Some other lady died on our wedding night. Well, time to smooch. And they do. So, all right, fine. If it can't be Peter, I guess this is the next best choice available to her. Let's close it up by naming our episode MVP. Both long silence.
Peter?
Sure. Yes. He was very funny in all the scenes, even the very noir one.
Mm-hmm.
I'll accept that. Least valuable player. I mean, Rory, you know, the attempted murderer.
Yeah.
Kind of hard to dispute.
Yeah, but I'm still going to go with Lexi's dad.
Yeah.
Because, ew, what are you doing, dude?
Yeah. Part of a not-so-proud Melrose Place tradition, but doesn't make it any less not okay when he does it.
Next time on Again With This, Lexi still thinks remarrying Coop is better than jail. Amanda thinks Kyle is better than Peter, and Sam can't stop thinking about Billy with Jennifer, even though it's Billy. Who knows what you'll think of our visual aids, but whatever you think, they're available for every episode of this podcast at againwiththispodcast.com. We're on Twitter at AWT90210. You can email us, hello@againwiththispodcast.com. You can call or text us, 210-920-HO99, anytime. And get extra episodes and access to our Discord at againwiththispodcast.com/club. We appreciate your financial, emotional, and nutritional support. I'm in Bezelman, Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Jailhouse Rock, Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer, David T. Cole, is a lunatic. Talk to you next time.
Rock bottom!
I love him.